is Rio 5, Dennis Flanders. Have you used photographs at all?
Hardly ever.
There's not much between you and photographs?
Not really, no. I'm sorry. There have been quite a number of times when I've thought that I ought to buy a camera and learn to take photographs to help me, but this is always followed by the thought that I've got to copy the photograph that I take anyway onto the drawing, so I might just as well use the nature instead of the camera, so that I've really done nothing at all with the camera, and I really don't think it helps.
And how accurate are you, actually? How representational are you, if you like? Some people would say, how near to photography?
Yes. Well, I've got to answer that in a twofold fashion. I am utterly accurate. I can draw a thing absolutely exact. Mm-hmm. And I do. But in a picture, I pick and choose what I want in the scene and maybe alter certain things. But this is not apparent to the onlooker. So the onlooker says, oh, this is a photograph, but he doesn't know what he's talking about. You see? But that's only half the story. Because another element in picture making is, or can be, that all the details and the shape of the objects are exactly photographic, shall I say, but the tonal values are altered to make a picture. Shall we say, put a spotlight on one particular part in the scene and keep the others subdued in shadow. Now that, you see, now there again, the onlooker, who is perhaps addicted to modern art, you know, in inverted commas, says, oh, that's photographic. He just doesn't know what's happened. He can't tell. He can't. Not unless he goes along and checks up. So there you are, you see. So I answer your question with two answers. One is that I'm perfectly accurate, or can be. And secondly, that I wish not to be, quite often.
Good. Well, we can leave that subject now. Get back to that statement you made about how important the war work really was in awakening you to colour, and then perhaps from there we can trace how it affected your work afterwards, how you went on the war to your work.
Yes.
Could you?
Yes, well, there's certainly no doubt that these experiences had brought me on much more rapidly than I probably would have done had I stayed at home in London otherwise, and seeing these bomb scenes which we've talked about. Then, you see, by that time I had a lot of work done. I had done a lot of work off my own bat, using colour, which, had there not been a war and had I not take part in it, I would probably have remained just a pen and ink draftsman, peddling away, doing drawings for newspapers. And although indeed I did this after the war, because I still thought it was a way of earning a living, the fact that I had done these pictures out in the country and in other parts of England and Britain had built up a tradition in my mind that I was a watercolour painter as well, as a newspaper man, as it were. And this finally won, really, because although some years were spent earning my living for newspapers, all the time I carried on with this colour work, which is now taken over, and I do very little newspaper work now at all. So it really was a very important chapter in my life. Gave me great opportunities, and I don't regret it at all. Of course, I do regret the losses and the deaths, and of course, everyone would. But this is how life goes. And I suppose we, you know, we pluck what fruit we can from any experience. Mm.
How were you occupied the war in the years immediately after the war? Many newspapers?
Well, yes. This was very difficult. I think I did touch on it before. I still had this idea. I could still only envisage earning a living by this old method of drawing pen and ink for newspapers. Now, whilst I was still in the army, I had an introduction to the editor of the Yorkshire Post, the great Linton Andrews, who subsequently became Sir Linton Andrews. Somebody knew him, who had known me and saw my drawings, and said, you know, you really ought to go along. So I did. While I was still in the army, I went along to the Yorkshire Post in Leeds. A very charming man. He said, oh, marvellous, you must draw for us when you come out of the army. And then, about a fortnight later, he ordered some drawings while I was still in the army. One drawing of Temple Newsom. I was at Welbeck Abbey at the time, and I couldn't do it just like that, but I had a few days leave, and I went and did it, and he published it. And then I found a subject in London, I think Buckingham Palace, with a guard in front of some foreign regiment, I think. Allied regiment, anyway, which was unusual. Mm. So that went in the Yorkshire Post. And then, after I got demobbed, he had a few more drawings, and then, when everything was, one was expecting everything to go well, the paper shortage got worse. And I think the Yorkshire Post, together with all the other papers, lost a certain page or several pages, and there was no room for any drawings, so it was quite hard going. All the time, actually, I had now and then a little drawing reproduced in Peterborough's column in the Daily Telegraph, who's been very faithful to me ever since I first took a drawing in there in 1937, I believe. Of course, this didn't pay very much, but it gave one very good publicity. And I did indeed get commissions from these little pictures, so that helped. But there was this terrible wait for newsprint to get more of it. I also remember a little magazine called Citizen that came out then, and this, the editor and publisher of this was a friend I'd met in the army, and this was a nice little magazine that dealt with municipal affairs. Mm-hmm. I don't know, I suppose it was directed at all the people who work in local government. It was very nicely reproduced, and I did a series of drawings of old town halls up and down the country. We had one of the Mercat Cross in Edinburgh, and the town hall of Berwick-on-Tweed, and I think I remember all of them. I went down to Salisbury and drew the Butter Cross there. Oh yes, and there was another one in Scotland, They call them something else, don't they? I can't recall it at the moment. The one at little town in Fife. I can't recall it. Perhaps I'll think of it later. Never mind. And Faversham in Kent and Chipping Campden. And then again, because of this paper shortage, it came to an end, Citizen. It wasn't as if it wasn't selling, but he couldn't make enough profit on the small number of copies that he was able to print. So that was very sad, really, because it was going to be rather nice. They were nicely reproduced, the drawings, and the whole magazine was very nice. But then, I think in 1949, the editor of the Yorkshire Post wrote to me and said, I've got some more paper, will you start on January next? This was, I think, in November. And I said, yes. I went up to Leeds and got some rooms and started drawing. And although I wasn't on the staff, I did a lot of drawings for the Yorkshire Post, and it lasted about a year. They were quite large, three or four columns in the paper, and we drew. The editor was very keen on the university there, so we had some drawings of Leeds University and of all the hostels where the undergraduates used to live. Oh, and then we had a drawing of Selby. I remember climbing up to the top of a shop and getting a marvellous view of Selby. Scarborough. That was the thing to have for a bank holiday, because all Yorkshire people are expected to go to Scarborough for the bank holiday. On the other side of the Pennines, they go to Blackpool, and on the east side, they go to Scarborough. And then I thought of a very bright idea, although I thought of it at the wrong time, Yorkshire Industries. I was thinking of the wool sheds and the shipbuilding yards and the ironworks, and also what I particularly wanted to do was the railway works at Doncaster, because they were still building steam locomotives in those days, and I've always been very fond of trains, and this was very nice. The only trouble was I thought of it in the middle of the summer, and I was in these hot factories when the sun was blazing down outside instead of being out by the rivers and so on, so that was rather stupid, but that was for my part. And then the editor seemed to get tired of it. He didn't want any more. So it's curious how these things come to an end. Mm-hmm. Having been terribly keen, I remember one day I'd made a drawing of the town hall at Leeds, which I thought was nice. You see, sometimes the editor suggested the subject and sometimes I suggested the subject. Mm. And sometimes I did a drawing and took it in, and sometimes he accepted and sometimes he didn't. Well, I'd done a drawing that I thought was something very interesting in Leeds, took it along to him, and to my utter surprise he said, "I don't want that. I can get a photographer to take that." And this was something completely new to me. I hadn't thought that he'd considered that all the pictures I'd done for him were only done because he couldn't get a photographer to do it, and I've often wondered since.
Oh, dear.
Because he was a very cultivated man. I mean, he's a terribly well-known, marvellous fellow he was, but this was the most extraordinary quirk. So I thought, okay, well, that's fine, I'm not bothered. So I didn't do it at all. And then a request came from the Birmingham Post a few weeks later. Would I do some drawings for them? So the same thing happened. I had a car by this time. So I was dashing about all over England in this old car, drawing various things. It was rather nice. Now, the Birmingham Post was quite a different kettle of fish. They had an article, a fortnightly article on a Saturday morning, written about the countryside for walkers or cyclists. It wasn't people who would go out into the country at weekends, you see, then, as they do now. And so this article was called The Riches at Your Doorstep, I remember. And there were a number of authors who wrote the article, but one particular one called Hancock, who I believe was the literary editor at the same time of the Birmingham Post. He was a very interesting man. Now, he would suggest some subject to me, you see, and I would go off. I was living at home again, of course, at Woodford, down in London. But we had a car, so I went off and used to do three or four drawings at the same time. Now, that area, instead of being, before it was Yorkshire, you see, this area was 60 miles around Birmingham. So I got to know that. Mm. And that takes in, on the east, Northampton and Leicester and a bit of Nottingham and into Derbyshire, Staffordshire and Shropshire, which is very lovely, and Warwickshire and Worcester perhaps, and then down into North Oxfordshire. Mm-hmm. So some very interesting scenes were done, and of course I began to resent rather having to do pen and inks only, because I was seeing all these lovely places and I wanted to make watercolour drawings of these places. However, it all filled up my mind with marvellous scenes to visit later on. Well, now, these drawings all came out, and then after that, when the summer was over, they came to an end, but another job followed. Same paper, same editor, public schools in the Midlands.
Mm-hmm.
So this started a very interesting series of visits to Oundle, Uppingham, Repton, Shrewsbury, Ellesmere, Wellington, the other Wellington, Wellington in Shropshire, and a number of other schools. Now, things got very busy. I was really very busy then, because when that series was still going on, the Sunday Times, had been having drawings by Hanslip Fletcher, which you've heard of before in this interview, wanted me to do some drawings for them, because dear old Hanslip Fletcher was getting rather on in years then and couldn't really do much, and he wasn't very well. So they asked me to do some drawings, and I did one or two. I had done one or two from time to time during the intervening period. And of course, this was a big plum job, I thought. And I was in a bit of a pickle. And for a certain time, I drew both for the Birmingham Post and for the Sunday Times. But it got a bit exhausting, especially as the subjects were all over the country. And then the Sunday Times offered me a contract. Well, I couldn't say no, so I had to tell the Birmingham Post that I couldn't do any more, and this was rather sad. But I asked them if I could recommend a friend, which was Jimmy Wood, this friend I'd met in the army, who I'd worked with quite a lot, you know, actually sketching together in the country, so we knew each other's work and how we worked. And this in fact happened. So Jimmy Wood took over the Birmingham Post job, and I did the Sunday Times drawings. I also got married at the same time. Mm-hmm. So all sorts of things were happening then. This was in the early 50s, you see. Well, now, this was very nice. It sounds, of course, as if I was only drawing pen and inks all the time, but this wasn't so, because I was still doing a lot of these watercolours whenever I could, and indeed I'd had one or two one-man shows.
Where?
Well, the first one was in 1947 at Colnaghi's in Bond Street. And this actually did rise arose from those exhibitions held in Ripon during the war, which we spoke of, because I did mention it actually. One of the directors of Colnaghi's happened to be staying in the neighbourhood and called in and saw the exhibition and asked to see Jimmy Wood and myself at the inn he was staying at. And this ended up in having an exhibition at Colnaghi's, you see. Well, since then, I'd met another proprietor of a gallery in London called Douglas Percival, who had a gallery run under the name of... No, I'm wrong there. Yes, Douglas Percival, that's right. And he gave me another exhibition about this time. And this was of watercolours of France, because I had started going to France then, and drawing the Chateau of the Loire, which attracted me very much because I'd seen pictures of them. We had two exhibitions there. And so that brings us down to the time when I did a year's drawings for the Sunday Times. And they wanted a theme, and I suggested famous streets. The idea began with four streets that I thought were very interesting, which I was acquainted with. One was London, of course, is my own town, but and is full of famous streets like the Strand and Piccadilly. But there was one in particular which I thought was very attractive. That was Lombard Street. Mm-hmm. It's been widened a bit now, and it's not quite the same. But at that time, it was in the form of a sort of wide S bend. It had a church in the middle, and another one at one end, and another one at the other end. But all the banks, the tall banks there, it's the head office of several of the banks, had signs hanging out. They made a thing of it, rather. There was the grasshopper and the white horse and lots of other things. All very nice signs, and it was a very interesting street, you see. And when the editor said, "Have you got an idea?" And I said, "What about famous streets?" And he said, "Well, yes." And this was one. And the other one I'd thought of at that time was Edinburgh, not Prince's Street, which is the obvious thing. It's not in itself a very interesting street. It's the fact that there aren't any houses on one side and you see the castle, that's why it's well known. But the Royal Mile, that's marvellous, full of interest all the way up, and a lot of different scenes that would make pictures. And then there was Stonegate at York, which is a narrow street with an inn sign right across it in the middle, and the cathedral at one end of it. And it's filled with jewellers' shops and antique shops, and the buildings themselves are from all ages, and it's very interesting. And the other, the fourth one, was King Street, Bristol, which I'd seen. Now that has some beautiful buildings in it, including the Flandodger Tavern, which is a half-timbered building, a lovely Queen Anne building with a shell door, and some fine warehouses, and it's all cobbled. And at the end of it, you see the masts of ships. So I said this to the editor. He said, "Well, it's a marvellous idea. Do those, we'll print them, and then see what happens." So I did those four, and then he said, "Well, I think it's quite a good idea, and because papers like to have a local interest about the country, you know, to help their circulation," he said, "we ought to carry this on all round the country." And of course there are well-known streets that anybody can think of when you mention the term. For instance, there's the front at Blackpool. There's the Rose at Chester, there's the Pantiles at Tunbridge Wells. So really it was quite a good idea, you see, for this sort of thing. And what in effect happened was, we more or less suggested that every town had a famous street, you know, everybody's high street. So it got the paper sort of interested all around. So this went on for about a year. And these weren't pen and inks. They were carbon pencil drawings. So they were reproduced half-tone, which was a bit of an innovation, actually, for newspapers. Mind you, they looked a bit duller. But I think there was much more softness about the pictures than the pen and inks. And I enjoyed doing it very much indeed. Well, then, I suppose I might as well stick my neck out. The Sunday Times was taken over by Lord Thompson, and everything was changed, and that was the end of that.
As quickly as that.
Well, just like that, yes. Mm. The editor came here. He was here one day for lunch. And I think about a week later, I got a letter from him, very diplomatic letter, saying, you know, it doesn't look as if we shall be having any more opportunities. So they paid me off. But I knew perfectly well what had happened, because the paper changed completely.
Mm. And ever since, anything?
No, nothing at all.
No.
But there were a lot of jobs on. I was quite happy then, and doing various things, selling pictures and so on. But it was a bit upsetting. Well, then something else came along, and I felt this was coming too. I have mentioned once or twice the Illustrated London News. And I should also have mentioned the magazine called The Sphere, which was like the Illustrated London News and came out every week. And I'd done a lot of drawings for them, which were beautifully reproduced, but of course very few people knew the paper. The one didn't get to a great deal of either money or fame from that, although they were nice to do. They used to reproduce these drawings of France that I did, and they were quite nice. It's a pity the magazine folded up, but however it did. But the Illustrated London News, of course, was a different kettle of fish. And they'd had a man called Brian de Grineau, who used to draw for them. In fact, they had three or four what they called special artists, who weren't on the staff, but drew regularly for them, you see. Well, now, Brian de Grineau was a great one at making a series of drawings which would occupy four pages in the middle of the paper. There'd perhaps be a double spread, as they called it, and then on the left would be some more drawings, and at the back would be some others, and they'd be of, oh, anything that was topical. Maybe the Queen was going to open a new hospital or something, and then he would go along and draw the hospital and all the people he needed. He was very good at figures. And then he'd go to various schools when they were having centenaries and draw the boys doing PT and playing football and classrooms and chapel and so on. He was very well known, and he drew for years and years and years and years. And occasionally, and of course the Illustrated London News was open to everybody, all sorts of artists sent work up, and there were the Christmas numbers and special numbers when anything happened. I mean, I remember when General de Gaulle came here, there was a special number devoted to him. And Brian de Grineau would draw various things happening. And he was very well known. Well, they'd had some of mine. And then Brian de Grineau again got old and I suppose retired. It's rather unfortunate. This sounds like stepping into dead man's shoes, but this, of course, is life. I mean, this is what happened. And I thought, because I'd met one or two of the staff in the street, and I had a hunch that they were coming to me. And, of course, for an artist to work for the Illustrated London News, this used to be one of the highlights, if you could. It was almost like Punch, almost like drawing for Punch. Mm. It was held in such high regard. Well, one day it happened. A telephone went. A voice said, "Is that you, Dennis?" I said, "Yes." "Sir Bruce Ingram would like a word with you." Oh, so here was the great man on the phone. He said, "Mr. Flanders, I wonder if you would call on me and bring some of your drawings at 2 o'clock next Wednesday. Goodbye." Just like that. And so I did, you see. But I was very wary, because I thought, you see, he was going to say, "I want you to carry on Brian de Grineau's job." And I couldn't, because I'm not a figure man. I'm not really interested. I don't mind putting figures in the picture to give the scale and give the life to the scene. But I can't really draw boys doing PT. I couldn't. And I wasn't going to then, because after all, the years were going by. I wasn't a youngster anymore, you see, and I had to more or less decide what I was going to do. So I went to see him, and I took some of the best drawings I'd got, which were landscapes and drawings of towns and so on.